Well, first, thanks, guys, for agreeing to sit down and talk with me about some of the issues that are facing Iowans will face when one of you gets to the legislature. Tyler, let's start with you.
Okay.
You're the challenger. Tell people something about yourself.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I enjoy doing these radio interviews. My name is Tyler Stewart. I am a candidate for Senate District 19. I'm born and raised in Northern Iowa. Two parents who were blue-collar workers. Worked really hard, gave me the opportunity that I have today. And I always consider myself a success story of public schools. My teachers were amazing. They were terrific. They inspired me. And kind of pushed me to go out there and try to replicate that experience for my students. And so I attended Central College, graduated in 4 years, and found myself in this district in Newton. And I've been there ever since. I've had a very successful teaching career so far. My first 9 years, won a couple statewide awards, a national award, and I kind of found my calling. But I guess why I'm running is that, I mean, if you want me to go down that road a little bit, why I'm running is, I guess I've seen the last couple years, the negative rhetoric that's kind of been thrown at public schools. And I felt it was my duty to step in and say something and stand up and speak up for some of our public school educators who are now leaving the field at an alarming rate. So I just feel like I have a good finger on the pulse of public education and what teachers need and what we can do. To kind of restore Iowa's public schools back to the gold standard they once were. And so I'm hoping that I can have everyone's opportunity or have everybody's vote come November 8th to kind of go in there and shake things up a little bit and fix our public schools.
Well, Ken, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running.
Well, farm boy from Mahaska County, born and raised there, lived there my whole life. Now, recently, I live in Pella. But grew up in the farm, as I said, but I farmed with my father and brother on the family farm for 6 years, and then started working for Wakesfield and Oskaloosa Ag Business. So I spent the next 30 years working for them, wearing a lot of different hats, sales, mostly management, and invaluable experience for me to interact with so many people. And then in a weak moment in 2009, I think it was, I agreed to run for Mahaska County Board of Supervisors. Won that, it was a seven-way primary, won that seat. And then only 2 years later, when redistricting happened in 2011, I was encouraged to run for the Iowa Senate. So I've been doing that now for 10 years, representing what was old District 40. So broad experience in the legislature, chaired the Natural Resources and Environment Committee, led the way at Governor Branstad's request to fund water quality to a very significant level, and of course worked with hundreds of other issues in that 10 years.
And why are you running?
I'm running because the same reason I ran 10 years ago. We need to make Iowa grow. When it comes to, and we'll talk about funding and taxes and state spending, I'm sure, we can't keep dividing the pie up into smaller pieces. We have to grow the pie. And I think we've been very successful in the last 6 years to grow Iowa in terms of its business environment, therefore its tax intake, and worked alongside Governor Reynolds for all of those years. And I think we share a common vision to grow Iowa, to make it a friendly place for business, for manufacturing, for farming, agriculture, and all those things that that Iowa is known for. So I think I have more work to do on that. We did a great job, I think, of reducing taxes over that 6 years, but we're not done yet. We need to keep working on the business environment to make Iowa government effective. The Iowa economic climate has to be healthy, and I think we can keep working on that, keep improving it.
Well, you mentioned budget, taxation, the economic environment, and you've done some work on that. Why don't you share what you think some of the accomplishments have been and what you would do in the future? And we'll start with you, Ken.
Well, I mentioned the water quality issue, which is, I came into the legislature with a keen interest in water quality because it's a big ticket item in Iowa, and agriculture has an impact on water quality. Before I got there, in 2013, Governor Branstad and Chuck Gipp at the DNR, Bill Norrie at the Department of Ag, announced the what we call the Nutrient Reduction Strategy, which is a good science-based, voluntary water quality practice. But we needed to fund that in a long-term, sustainable way. And that's what Senate File 512 is all about. As chairman of the Natural Resources Committee, Governor Branstad asked me to lead the charge on that. We completed that bill in January of 2018. It was the first bill that Governor Reynolds ever signed as governor. Beyond that, I've always been on the Education Committee. I've always been on the Appropriations Committee. Those are two key committees. As a member of the Appropriations Committee, I'm fully aware of how many people have their hands out asking for government money. And so I've honed my skills, I think, to sorting out what's essential government functions and what is not. I've also been on the Agriculture Committee for all of those 10 years. It's no secret that the animal rights crowd has come after me because I am a hog producer as well with my brother on the family farm. And so I continue to work to protect Iowa farmers from these San Francisco activists that seem determined to put the meat industry out of business. Taxes, I'm not on Ways and Means. We're going to continue to work on that, but it's been very much a part of my work over the last 10 years as well.
Okay, so Tyler, why don't you have at it, deal with any of those issues he brought up, education, water quality, taxation.
I should have brought a pen and paper to take notes. You know, there's a few things that was kind of brought up there when it comes to, I'll be all right. I'm a teacher, it's all in the back of my mind. When it comes to issues that we need to discuss in Iowa, and taxes were brought up, I think everybody would be mostly in favor of lowering taxes. I think the only issue that I have is that typically when we talk about lowering taxes, it ends up benefiting the wealthy more than the average American. It's great. I'm thankful for the tax break that I got, but it was very minimal in nature compared to some of the wealthiest Iowans. I think that's kind of similar as well to the federal tax cut that occurred under President Trump that gave wealthy corporations and wealthy individuals a bigger, more permanent tax cut, whereas people like me are now seeing an increase in our taxes federally. And I think that's just a very frustrating way to look at taxes. I often hear my parents who are very Republican will often say things when I mention corporate handouts, corporate welfare or handouts to the wealthy, and they'll say, well, you know, that's just the way it's always been. It doesn't have to be that way anymore. We can elect leadership that can come in and make sure that average Iowans receive some of these benefits more so than these wealthy corporations or wealthy individuals in the state. Education was not on the list of things that was just mentioned as major issues in the state of Iowa that we should be focusing on. We're looking at long.
Ken mentioned that he'd worked in education.
Worked in education, right?
But advance it. Am I representing what you said?
Yes, right. I was referring to the list of things he mentioned offhand about that were on his list, and education was not on that original list that he just mentioned. You listened to that portion of it, but what's frustrating for me is we want to talk about the long-term growth of Iowa. We need young people in Iowa, and we don't have young people coming to the state as we once did several years ago. I think there's a lot of issues and reasons for that. I like I said, tax breaks are great. I don't think the level of the tax break that average Iowans got are going to lure young Americans to young Americans to the state. But also, we got to look at social issues because young people care about social issues. Abortion is top of mind for a lot of people in this country, and that's one issue that we really will see people move away from the state or refuse to move here if we have some of the country's most restrictive abortion laws. I don't think anybody here is looking for more abortions. We're looking at solutions to prevent them, and banning them all in every single case with no exceptions is just one of the more radical policies that will prevent people from moving, more specifically young people, to the state. Education, again, back to that, we have to make sure we are funding our public schools to a rate and we're not villainizing our public school educators, because we do that, they leave the state. and then we see schools struggle, and we see Iowa's education standing in the nation drop. We need to understand that young people care about some of these social issues, and if we start adopting the most radical policies, we will see them stop coming to our state, and we're starting to see that.
Ken, would you like to respond?
Oh, I can go down a lot of rabbit holes there, Bob, but first, very briefly to the point of the wealthy got the tax breaks. That's the nature of the tax, progressive tax structure, is that the wealthy pay by far the largest amount of taxes. Every Iowan got a tax cut with this, and we eliminated retirement income altogether from income tax in Iowa. As far as Mr. Stewart has a couple times mentioned villainizing teachers, I listened to the podcast with his interview with you a few weeks ago, and repeatedly came after Governor Reynolds on questioning her motives, saying that she's trying to discredit the public schools. That's simply not true. She has three daughters, one of which is a public school teacher. Every one of her children goes to a public school in Iowa. I have never heard a governor, including Governor Reynolds, malign public schools, because that would be foolish to do so. It is the biggest part of our state budget is to fund K-12 education. It has always been that way. It always will be that way. And at some point, I'd like to talk about this, what's perceived to be a lack of funding. But I don't want to dominate the conversation here, but I would like to come back to that at some point with some real facts on how we fund education, K-12 education in Iowa.
So do you want to deal with Governor Reynolds, or do you want to move?
I can unpack the Governor Reynolds things. I mean, she's been supportive of politicians in her party, and she's not spoken out against certain politicians in her party that have threatened or proposed legislation to jail teachers. It's not always the fact that I may not agree with her level of funding and the funding that the Republicans put forth. But it's the rhetoric that she allows her party to spew that is scaring teachers away. When we look at that January cycle, when the session starts, and we see cameras in classrooms brought up, we see let's ban these certain books, let's go after teachers in the classroom and what they're teaching and make sure that they can't teach. There's a lot of things we're going in and talking about, and we're not really looking at the fact that teachers are struggling to stay afloat. If teaching in Iowa is so excellent right now, then why are teachers leaving the state? Why are they leaving the profession altogether? That's a problem, and we need to address it instead of going after these culture wars with transgender students or making homophobic comments. These things from elected officials are utterly nonsense, and it's really discouraging people from coming to our state, young people, and it's discouraging teachers from wanting to stay in the profession.
I have quite a stack of papers here, Dr. Bob.
Do you want to defend the governor?
Yes, I'm going to defend the governor, because that's just not accurate. That's not true to say that she is maligning teachers or schools. It's not true. Is there concern about some of the topics that are being covered in schools? Yes, that's everybody in America knows that's an issue right now. I have copies of books. I have all sorts of data on that, and parents are concerned about things. I mentioned prior at a prior meeting about the, for instance, just an example, the Linmar transgender policy. That is egregious. I can get into details on that if you like, but parents are deeply upset about some of those things. I'm not lumping all teachers, all schools in that. I never have, nor has the governor. But there are egregious examples of where there is either classroom content or book content that is not acceptable for K-12 education.
I would love to hear some of these books you're referring to. I know Jack Whitfer was, I think one of the books he referenced was The Hate U Give, which is a book that is in my classroom, and I have the series in my classroom. What I would suggest is when a member of the governor's party, especially such a high-ranking member such as Jack Whitfer, says something so damning about teachers and threatening to teachers like that, where is she? Why can't she speak out and say, we don't support that?
Can you specifically tell me what he said?
He supported legislation that would even went further to say that we should increase the punishment for teachers that have controversial things in the classroom. And then even at one point, he went on his sinister agenda spiel. I would suggest, why can't the governor push back on that and say, hey, let's tone down the rhetoric. Our teachers matter, and this can be damaging to them.
That sinister agenda did not come from Jack Whitford.
Sorry, I apologize. Might have been someone
else. Well, but that's indicative of a lot of the things that you've said.
Who did it come from?
You tell me.
I'm pretty sure I heard it say sinister agenda.
You tell me.
Sinister agenda was said repeadedly by members of the leadership.
Right. I can pull up the videos if you want.
No, it wasn't. It was said repeadedly in the media.
Okay. All right. I believe it was in the Senate Majority Leader's address to the state.
Well, I challenge you, either one of you, to find that.
Good thing we have phones.
That was said, Ken, and it has implications.
I understand that. You mentioned jailing teachers. You mentioned cameras in classrooms. I never have heard anybody talking about jailing teachers.
That's shocking.
I have heard people say that if some of the book content was provided in a setting other than the school, that some people would be subject to jail penalties. So this classroom camera, one representative had that in a bill. We have hundreds of bills that are filed, and that was seized on by the teachers union. It never got a subcommittee hearing. It went absolutely nowhere. It was a harebrained idea. We have a lot of harebrained ideas that come up from both sides of the aisle, and that was just one that never had any chance of going. It was never seriously considered by anyone at any time. I don't even think by the bill sponsor. I think he was trying to make a point, which is another reason that sometimes legislators file bills, is to make a point.
I think that's exactly my concern. What point are they trying to make? And I guess my other concern would be if it was on the first day of the legislative agenda when he mentioned Chapman, I should say.
Okay.
He's mentioning a sinister agenda. That was said to the entire body. So why were you there? Did you not hear it? And that was all over. It did dominate the news, rightfully so. When you go after a large group of people like that, that's shocking and that's scary. The fact that you didn't know that, that's a little alarming.
Maybe I should show you hundreds of emails I have from teachers that would alarm a lot of parents.
I'm sure you can gaslight the people listening to this.
I'm not gaslighting.
Yeah,
anybody.
That's what it is. You're assuming that you're going to tell people that there's all these things in emails that teachers are doing, but not providing any context surrounding them.
I have hundreds of emails.
You can keep saying that. It's always about the emails. I'm telling you, it's just what you're doing. Your rhetoric is damaging to public schools.
What?
And then why are teachers leaving?
They're leaving all over the country.
Why?
Stuart.
Why? Look at the states that they're leaving from.
That's a problem in all 50 states. And
that's not true.
That's true.
Oh, okay. Well.
All right. So are we done with education? Do we want to move on?
I just want the facts to be dealt with. At your last meeting with Mr. Stewart, I listened to that carefully. The whole half hour was spent on education and funding. And the statement was repeatedly made that we're underfunding schools. And this shouldn't be new to Mr. Stewart because he's heard these numbers before. I have here, and these are numbers from the Department of Management in the state of Iowa sent to the U.S. Department of Education. And I'm going to assume right now, Mr. Stewart, that you were a young child, perhaps in school in 1993, 29 years ago. We funded all sources of funding for schools, federal, state, local, was $5,440 per student per year. By 2018, 25 years later, that number had increased to $13,595 per student. I challenge anybody to get a CPI, an inflation calculator that you can Google, and put in the 5440 from 1993 and see what it comes up with. It comes up with $9,300 but we were spending 13.5. So we have not only in education in Iowa, we have not only kept pace with 1993, we have kept pace with inflation relative to 1993. We also have $4,400 more per student per year than we did in 1993. So this, I understand that the teachers union and the media often talk about underfunding education or they want it fully funded. No one's ever explained to me what fully funded means. And my definition of that is keeping your promises. Since Republicans took control of the state Senate in 2017, we have delivered every dime we had promised. That wasn't true when Democrats controlled the Iowa Senate or the Iowa legislature, when they had all three, the House, the Senate, and the governor's chair. They broke promises 6 out of the 10 years prior to that. So it's not what you promise in January when the cameras are on and the news media is there. It's the promises that you break in October when you find out that your budgeting practices led to a deficit. We can talk about a lot of things, but if we don't understand, and if Iowans don't understand, if the constituents in Senate District 19 don't understand that we are, it is a huge priority for the governor, for me, for every legislator to fund education, to keep our promises, to train up our kids. So that's a red herring to say that we are underfunding education. By all references to past history, we are funding it better than we ever have.
You know, I can provide some context around fully funded because I, being in a public school, I see on a daily basis the needs that teachers have that aren't being met and the needs of students, most importantly, that aren't being met. We have kids that are on IEPs or have 504s or certain behavior plans that maybe they require having a para with them all day, not being met. School districts cannot afford paras to be there with those kids at all times, or we're stretching paras thin. They're bouncing from kid to kid. Some kids just don't have the needs that they need to be met. We can't supply them. And we're losing some of our most vulnerable population and some of our most deserving population because of the fact that we can't fund all of those things completely. I'm not sitting here saying you're not trying to fully fund education. I'm saying we just need to do a little better because I am there. We are struggling. And it's almost as if nobody's listening to public educators. You make it sound like the teachers union has been calling me on a daily basis. I don't think they've talked to me once, to be honest. Maybe one time when they did an interview with me for an endorsement. That's it. They've never contacted me anything about what I should say. It doesn't happen. I am here on my own recognizance telling you teachers are struggling. And so if you were to be my elected official, I would hope you would listen to me and understand that we're struggling and we need help.
I've heard this every year for 10 years. I've just demonstrated how effectively at record levels we are funding K-12 education in Iowa. And you can't get around those facts if that's what we are doing.
That doesn't paint the whole picture. There's more to a school's budget. There's more to a school system and how it operates. There's just more to the picture than that packet of papers right there. There are kids with real needs in the school that are not being met. And I just asked a very polite and kind question as if you were my legislator. Would you listen to me? And you just would politely just told me, I am going to stick to the facts of this paper. There's more to that story there, Ken.
I've listened to you and people like you every year for 10 years. I've heard it all many, many times. But at some point, we have to deal with the facts.
Okay.
And the facts are we're funding K-12 education in Iowa at historic levels.
Okay, there's more to the story, like I said, and I just think it's kind of disappointing. I mean, have you spent time in a public school? Have you gone
through? I've spent plenty of time.
I would like to finish what I'm saying, if I could, because you constantly have this pattern. I'm still finishing my question. So what I struggle with is that I would love it for you to come into a school building and spend a couple days understanding the budget of how that school operates, understanding individual kids who are struggling in that classroom and in that school, because I see it on a daily basis. Every single day. And you just telling me this packet of paper is more important than my lived experience for the last 9 years is astonishing from a state senator.
You said that we were underfunding school. I'm demonstrating that we're not. I've met with the Pella School Board now 11 consecutive years. I have met with the Centerville School Board. I just met with the Oskaloosa Superintendent. I meet with school boards and with superintendents many times a year.
That's not a classroom.
I've been in the classroom. My niece
come to Newton. And we'll show you what it's like.
I've been in Oskaloosa.
Okay. Two different communities.
I've been to Centerville.
Okay.
You want to compare notes with Centerville? A town that lost 400 jobs to when Rubbermaid left town. It's a tough area.
I'm familiar with communities losing their...
I know you are.
Right.
Newton did too.
Right. Yeah. And again, I see it on a daily basis. We can move on if you'd like, because I don't think we're going to get anywhere.
Okay. Which issues would you like to address? I mean, I've got a whole long list of them, but why don't we alternate? Somebody pick an issue.
I think abortion would be a great one to touch upon, because I don't think that was mentioned during our legislative forum.
Go for it.
I think I mentioned earlier that abortion is a major issue facing the country right now with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. I think a lot of people are wondering which direction Iowa is going to go moving forward in this next legislative cycle. I think the governor's been very clear. Republicans have been very clear. They're going to go for some of the strictest, most restrictive abortion laws in the country. And I think that's not great for our long-term growth of getting young people to the state. And I think some of the policies that have been suggested by Republican officials, just like my opponent, Senator Rosenboom here, some of those are so restrictive. It's to me monstrous and evil that we would suggest forcing somebody who's been raped and become pregnant as a result of a rape to be forced to carry that child to term. So.
Well, I have a 10-year record, a lifelong record of being very pro-life, and I don't apologize for that to anyone. I thought it was interesting that Mr. Stewart brought up young people in the context of we need more young people, but killing them in the womb doesn't seem like a very effective way to grow our population, our young population in Iowa. Having said that, yes, Iowa has passed some restrictive abortion laws, as most people would expect me to do, as this community would love me to do. And it's obviously been a contentious issue in America for well over 50 years. And my stance is clear. I will protect life. The place that Mr. Stewart went to and others go to is no exceptions for rape and incest and for life of the mother. First of all, there is not a state in America that does not allow an exception for the life of the mother. That is a red herring argument. It's simply not true. In terms of rape and incest, my personal view, as a father of an adopted son, is that there is value in all human life. That's my personal view, and I've expressed that many times. Beyond that, as a legislator, if faced with a question, a bill, for instance, that deals with abortion, I understand that my view isn't the only view. And I have a 10-year track record of working with people across the aisle. And I'd be happy to, for instance, support a bill that would prohibit abortions and leave those exceptions for rape and incest. I wonder if my opponent would support a bill that did away with all abortions other than rape and incest.
I think I would probably support something a little more, be a little more information or more exceptions out there, because I think when you just mentioned about life of the mother, that's shocking to me. What you said may be true, but I think what we're seeing in some states that doctors are forced to make sure women get to a certain, their health has to decrease or decline to a certain point before they're allowed to perform
that
abortion. There's been several stories across the country where that's had to happen, where women, our doctors were forced to make sure women, whether they went into sepsis or something, they had to wait until they could perform that abortion to save the mother's life. We're seeing states that are pushing abortion laws where young kids who have been raped are going across the state lines to try to find an abortion, punishing doctors. You got Texas, who's offering citizens money to call out people they know have had abortions. I think we need to take a step back, and if we really want to lower abortions, we need to make sure that there are economic opportunity in the state where people feel as if they can actually carry that child and take care of that child when it's born. I think that'd be a great way to look at that portion of it. But like I said, I don't want abortions, but what I understand full well is that when it comes to that moment, when somebody has the opportunity to becomes pregnant and they want to give birth to that child, or maybe they're with the doctor and they're faced with some really difficult decisions because they've maybe, you know, got their room ready, they've painted a wall, whatever it may be, but they're faced with some really devastating news, and that difficult decision that they're going to have to make. I don't belong in that waiting room. You don't belong in that waiting room. The only people that matter in that decision are the family and the doctor, and they should work together to make the decision that best suits that family.
Well, you didn't answer my question about supporting legislation that would prohibit abortion except in the case of rape and incest, because right. That's always where the Democrats go. Sure. And I'm trying to force you to say you would support something that would right. save children right. other than those exceptions.
Right.
And on other issues that you brought up, and they're valid, other options other than abortion, adoption. I'm an adoptive parent. We have the safe haven laws in Iowa, which provide, and we expanded that, and I have supported that, and I'm working on legislation that perhaps would expand that even more. Last year, we passed what became known as the Moms Bill, which provided all sorts of resources for those that found themselves in a pregnant and in a tough situation. Not one Senate Democrat voted for that bill. Not one. We have had conversations going forward. We will provide more options for folks. We have, but let's understand that this is an issue about taking the life of an unborn baby, and that's a serious matter, and I will never lose sight of that fact.
Right. I just don't approve of me legislating my own morality onto other people. And I would go back to, I know what you were trying to do. It was pretty clear you were trying to get me to commit to something there. And I would say, I did mention actually that I would be willing to listen, and I would probably push for more exceptions. I don't think, stopping at the heartbeat or things like that. I think there needs to be more of a discussion, listening to experts and scientists. And I would love to sit down and do those things. But I hesitate. I don't want to jump on board after this Roe decision in the first session to just push for something very extreme and radical. We need to make sure we sit down, because in the grand scheme of things, people's lives are at stake, and equal rights are at stake as well.
And babies' lives are at stake.
And that's your opinion. That's where life begins. And again, that's your own legislating. That's you legislating your own morality.
Is scientific.
Are you comfortable moving on?
Or yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about child poverty. I mean, in many of our schools, they're at 50% reduced for free lunches. What can we do about that? How can we? I mean, kids are in poverty situations through no fault of their own. What can we do?
Well, I'll start by saying, number one, you're right, Bob. We know there are those tough situations. But America has the greatest, the most elaborate, expensive safety net ever known to the world. And when I was young, Bob, and when you were young, we talked about a shortage of food around the world. Thanks to modern agriculture, those threats really never happened. We don't really talk about people dying of hunger now so much. There are some, of course, in some places in the world. But we talk about food insecurity, not actually starvation that you and I grew up seeing, the distended bellies of kids in Africa and other poor parts of the world. So we have come a long ways towards reducing that. Now we have a very robust safety net in America, and that's true in Iowa as well. So can we do more? I don't know. There is a limit to what government can do, and we can't always look to government to solve every problem. So I'll let Tyler respond to that, but we're doing an awful lot right now.
Yeah, and I would say, being in Newton, I've seen a lot of poverty. I know myself growing up, my parents worked full-time jobs. My dad worked in a factory. My mom worked at Hardee's making very low wages. I think one thing we could do to help bring up some of these lower communities or poorer communities would be increasing the minimum wage. And I know that's going to be an unpopular idea to Republicans, but at some point, we got to realize that working a minimum wage job doesn't put food on the table or like it used to. Is you live in poverty if you work a minimum wage job. And I would say there are some safety net programs out there that's great, excellent. I'm sure a lot of Iowans benefit from those, but we need to talk about opportunity in our state and opportunity in our country. And do we have the freedom of opportunity? Do we have some of these freedoms to, if I'm trapped in a job and I can't get out of it because I can't afford to go, you know, to quit my job and try something. I can't afford to go to school. I can't afford to do a lot of, I'm trapped in my own job. I'm trapped in a community. There's a lot of little things out there that we want to talk about. There's no food shortages. Great. We're talking about kids in Africa. I mean, we need to focus on some of our poor citizens in the state of Iowa who have no hope. I deal with kids every day. I do a unit where we talk about planning for their future. And one of the things I see are kids that are brilliant and bright and very knowledgeable. And they talk about wanting to go get this degree at this university. That'd be really cool. But they probably won't do that because there's no way their family could afford it. And I think it's a shame that if we live in a country of so much opportunity that we have kids that are refusing or suggesting that their ability to go get a world class education is dependent on what their family's done and not on what they've accomplished as a student.
Well, I'm not sure how to respond to that because that's very general and vague in nature. We all recognize the problem, but even the definition of poverty. My parents grew up in the Great Depression. Does anybody in America live the way they lived in the 1930s? Very, very, very few. So poverty is also a relative thing. I mean, that's not dismissing it at all. I'm deeply concerned about it. And Tyler, I know in Newton, Oskaloosa, Pella, I know there are very difficult family situations. My wife was a kindergarten associate in the Oskaloosa School District for quite a number of years. My niece is a kindergarten teacher. They have gone on many in-home visits prior to the school year to visit with families. I'm fully aware of the difficulty of some, and there's a lot of reasons for that. We could probably, all three of us, talk the rest of the evening on that, but there comes a point at which we can't expect government to do everything, I'll just leave it at that for now, unless I'm going to talk about it further.
Can I just clarify that your response was you understand that there are issues, and like you said, we could talk about it all day, but there are a lot of issues, but it's not your responsibility as elected official to deal with those all the time.
I said it's not the responsibility of government to be all things to all people, to sum it up.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
Okay, one of the things that I'm constantly hearing is that we need more child care. And that, especially during the pandemic, a lot of women in particular left the workforce and now might like to come back, but they can't get affordable child care. Can the legislature do anything about getting affordable child care? So essentially bringing those people back to work that want to work, then put in those jobs that we so desperately need workers for to help make our economy sizzle.
I think I would like to sit down, Republican or Democrat, and talk about this and figure out ways because it has to be done at some point. We need to understand that women joining the workforce is great for our GDP as a nation. It's great for our state when we have more people in the workforce. It's kind of shocking to me. I shouldn't be shocked, but it should be alarming to everybody that we have people that are just making the decision of, well, you know what? I could go to work, but I should probably just stay home because I won't make enough money because childcare is so expensive. I have friends who have two kids. My brother just had triplets. They have four kids now. Childcare is going to be a nightmare for them. It's an absolute barrier to employment. If we want to expand our workforce and expand our economy in the state of Iowa, then we need to make sure we have an opportunity for some of these women to join the workforce again. It's unbelievable how expensive childcare has been. There's not a lot of options. There's childcare facilities shutting down. I don't know right off the top of my head what the answer would be, but we need to sit down and figure it out because we are creating a large barrier for people to join the workforce.
Well, we're a few miles from Vermeer, who has a great child care facility within their own manufacturing facility. And there are many other private employers that do that as well. There's always room for more, yes. But that is an example to me of can government come in and just fix all of that? Because you got two sides of that coin. You have the tremendous cost of child care for families. I get that. You also have the low wages of direct care workers, whether it be in a nursing home or a COC or a child care facility. So this came up in our discussion in Newton a few days ago. So can government fix both sides of that? No. It has to be families determining their best way forward. It has to do with major employers and other employers providing opportunities. It has to do with government to the extent that we've dealt with this. We've done a lot of work on child care in the last few years, but those tend to be minimal in nature, because many argue that that can't always be the role of government to fix all of those things. We all have to be working together. Public, private, churches. That's how we solve those problems.
I hesitate to just say let's trust big businesses and big corporations to solve this problem for the citizens. I would applaud Vermeer for doing those things. That's great. I wish every corporation or big business in a community would offer those things. But what about teachers? What about people that work a minimum wage job and they have a child? If we want to grow our population and grow our workforce, then we need to make sure that childcare is not an absolute barrier. It needs to be affordable for all Iowans, and not one that forces the woman to stay home or the man to stay home because it's more affordable or lucrative for them to stay home and take care of the child than it is to go join the workforce. That just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Is there any issue that we didn't deal with that you would like to address, either of you? Or I guess we could go back, but I would prefer...
Well, there are hundreds of things the state legislature deals with every year. It's amazing how many different things they deal with. I'm going to touch on two, and they are agriculture-related because that's my life. That's a huge part of Iowa's economy. And because all of us tend to work on the committees that we're assigned to, so we focus most of our efforts in those areas. I mentioned water quality. That's another narrative that's often out there, is Iowa quality's bad, terrible, and getting worse. And I responded to that every time. Iowa's water quality is fine and slowly getting better. And I can document that any number of ways. I'm not, and then agriculture, I touched on this, the animal rights groups that are making a presence. They did this in the NFL football game just a couple of weeks ago. The same group that comes after me, comes after other Iowa farmers. I was talking to a Minnesota farmer yesterday. They come after them there. And these are people that are intent on destroying the meat industry. They say they're animal welfare, that's their care. It's not. It's just destroying the meat industry. And I have a deep concern. I work on this a lot in the legislature with Secretary of Ag, Mike Nagy. What we call FADS, foreign animal disease, African swine fever. People have heard of that term. If something like that were to get in Iowa, it would bring Iowa to its knees, literally overnight. And so we work a lot on that, foreign disease preparedness, plans, and funding for that. It's not on the radar of most people, but it could potentially be a huge problem in Iowa. If just look back to 2015 when the avian flu hit, that was serious in a lot of different ways. If that were to get a disease that would be so devastating to the hog business or the cattle business, it would crush Iowa. And these discussions about funding any role of government would change overnight. So I want to continue to work on those with the Secretary of Ag and with other people, and very important. It's just one piece of what I do.
I'll respond to that. I listened to your podcast with you did a podcast with some people a while back. I can't remember. And I learned about the animal rights groups and stuff. And that's appalling to me that they would go after you like that. That's disgusting. I mean, they can believe what they want. They can, think, whatever I get where they're coming from, but at the same time, that's taking it way too far and harassing somebody like that, and that's ridiculous. So that's they should be prosecuted to full extent of law, no questions asked. But water quality wise, I think there are maybe a thing we could do better would be, and this is just coming from my own experience, making everyday Iowans like me who treat their lawns a little more aware of how that runs off, and I think maybe some public service announcements or making labeling on bottles a little more clear for people, because I think that is a portion of it too that is often not talked about a lot. It's pinned on farmers and what they can do better, but I think everyday Iowans could probably do a little better too, because it's just not something people are really aware of all the time. So I think that's something we could work towards to let people know, make people aware.
I'm very grateful I live in the country. The last thing I want is more lawn to mow.
Right.
So I would never do anything like that to keep up with my neighbors. Anything else that either of you would like to bring up?
I would like to touch up on something that we discussed at our legislative forum. It was the last question. And I was deeply alarmed. I don't mean to elaborate on what that was or to.
Go ahead.
Okay. I think the question was, and hopefully it doesn't come to this, but with Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas suggesting that they could overturn another Supreme Court decision and pass it on to the states, and whether or not Iowa legislators would be willing to codify same-sex marriage into law to protect that right for same-sex couples. I know you gave your answer, and I think it was quoted in the Newton Daily News as I was reading earlier today. You mentioned something to the effect of they can have their parades, but they shouldn't expect me to dance in them, something to that effect. I was just curious at what you meant by that.
Well, what I meant by that is that it was a response to the question about something Clarence was attributed to Clarence Thomas. I don't think it actually came from Clarence Thomas, but we'll have to leave that go because it had to do with, I'll give you the example of these people that have been sued, put out of business by gay rights groups because they wouldn't bake a cake. They had a religious objection to baking a cake for a wedding. And those aren't perceived problems. Those are real problems, especially in Canada, by the way. But that's what I mean. I have no problem with a gay pride parade. I've never objected to that in my life. But it's this idea that we're supposed to all agree with that lifestyle. And if asked, we're supposed to bake a cake for their wedding. That's what I meant by that. And it should, I think it's pretty clear what I meant by it. So
So you're more concerned about the people refusing to bake the cake than the millions of maybe I guess Americans or just the Iowans that are part of a same-sex couple that potentially you wouldn't support codifying that into law. We're not asking for you to go dance in a parade. We're just asking, hey, yeah, you still have the right to get married. That's it. And it's just a right that every Iowan should have. So
you have that right, and no one in Iowa that I'm aware of is talking about taking.
So, but you said you would not codify into law if it came down to it in the state of Iowa. If it was overturned and it were to come up in Iowa, would you codify into law?
Overturned
the Obergefell decision, Supreme Court level, and that was passed on to the states to decide.
That I would disallow same-sex marriage.
Would you codify it into law? Was the question.
I didn't say I would.
I know you do. That's what I'm saying. All you would have to do is vote yes. I'll codify that into law so same-sex couples have the right to get married.
I'm not ready to do that. Like you mentioned on abortion, I wouldn't want to hear the argument. And I would want to hear what that looks like and what that means.
It looks like any other marriage. Like any other.
Well, no one's threatening that.
That's a common misdirect right now. If it were to come down to you and they said, hey, we have a legislation on the table, would you codify the law to allow it?
I answer a hypothetical.
So the answer would no. Okay. I just think it's important to understand the rhetoric around what you said has lasting impacts on that population. That's why I was upset.
And I asked you to
because
explain
you're,
what I said that
right,
was so offensive.
Right,
you did not answer me. You haven't yet.
Oh, I would love to right now. You're equating, essentially, allowing same-sex couples to get married, that basic equality that every straight couple has in our state, to you dancing in a parade. And that's like flaunting in your face. Equal is not more. Equal is just that equal. And the fact that you spun it out in a way to say, I'm not going to, don't make me dance in your parade. That was really offensive to that population. You should apologize to them and maybe clarify what you said, because that rhetoric does have lasting consequences. I'm the one that sees those kids in the classroom. I'm the one that sees a lot of those kids who are harmed every day from the homophobic rhetoric. It's dangerous.
That was not homophobic rhetoric.
And we'll trust the person that's out of touch with social issues.
Okay. I think it'd be good to move on.
Sure.
Any other issues that you want to bring up that we haven't brought up?
Well, I'm going to touch on one because it was dealt with extensively in your interview with Tyler a few months ago about the school choice issue, that it will be a big issue this year. And despite all the angry rhetoric about the governor and her position and misrepresentation of that position, that will come up. And just to clarify why that is an issue today, I'll give you an example. A colleague of mine, and I called that colleague today to reconfirm that my memory was correct. The colleague has two teenage daughters that have been forced to shower after PE in their school, and this is a rural school, because there is a teenage boy that claimed a gender identity that allowed him to be in there. So they now shower. They then showered in their swimsuits. So when that happens in Iowa schools, parents take notice, governors take notice, senators take notice, and that is not acceptable. And so at a lot of different levels, we could talk about why school choice is what it is today in America. And this is not just in Iowa. We saw it play out in Virginia last fall in an election. Parents want to be heard. They want to know what's going on in the classroom, in content of coursework and in content of books. So that conversation will continue in a very significant way in 2023. In the Iowa legislature.
So I would love to unpack what just happened there. It's very common that the talking points we just saw were when pushing the school choice narrative. What Republicans are tending to do are say, hey, look at this transgender issue over here. No context, not a whole lot of stuff going on there. They'll just misdirect over here and say, this is a reason as to why we should allow school choice because parents are upset. Well, what we're doing there is taking a portion of our population and turning them into a political pawn. I don't think that, I'd love to know more about that story and what the decisions would be from that administration down in that school district to understand the full complexity of what actually happened, because there's always more to the story. But what then you did was you pivoted to classroom content, and parents want to be involved. They want to have their voices heard. Show up to school board meetings. Show up to conferences. We post our curriculum online. We let everybody know what we're teaching on a weekly basis. It's there. Be involved. We'd love to do it. You suggest there's content in the classroom that's nefarious or bad. We're not teaching kids how to be transgender. We're not teaching kids, go be gay if you want. You know, that's not happening. What we're doing is teaching representation. We're choosing books that shows lived experiences of different groups of people, because that's the reality our kids are growing into today. That's the reality of the life they're going to be a part of in the future. Representation is really important, and we don't represent our communities of our schools, of our population of students. There are lasting consequences because of that. They need to feel represented. If we don't represent them and talk about them in some way of just making kids aware, they're not going to feel like they belong. And that's damaging, and it's a problem.
Do you believe that those parents should have been in that situation where they had to have their girls dress in swimsuits to take a shower? Do you believe that's okay?
I would say in nature, no. But I would love to know more about the story, because I don't know. I don't think that's the true bottom line of that story.
Of course it is. I talked to that person today.
And
what context are you? Do you think you would be?
I would love to know the decision-making process with the administration behind that, because there's always more to a story. As a teacher, we always have students who will go out and say crazy things that happen in the classroom that just aren't true. I would like to know more. I would like to seek out more information.
What do you need to know more? What?
Did I not just tell you? I want to know the decision-making process and the details from the administration. That's what I would want to know. I want to hear it from them and not just a parent or just a student. That's what I'd like to hear.
So you don't believe this parent?
I'm saying I would like to know more because there's more to every story. What's wrong with getting more information?
You haven't answered my question. Is it okay for a biological male, 14 years old, to be in the shower?
You can go back to the tape because I did answer the question.
Is it okay for them to be in the shower?
I've already answered that question.
14-year-old girl.
I literally already answered that question. I don't know what else you want from me. I've done the responsible thing by seeking out.
Yes or no.
You can go back to the tapes. I answered it.
I don't want 100 words. I want yes or no. Is it okay? You think it's okay?
I answered the question earlier. On the surface level of what you said, if those exact details are correct.
They are correct.
According to you.
No, they are correct. See, truth is truth.
What are you talking about? What I'm asking is I want to know the people that made that decision in the school, the school officials. I want to know all sides of that story to make sure what you said and what the person you were talking to said actually lines up to be accurate. Because a lot of times there's more to the story. And you know that's to be true in a lot of different instances, I'm sure.
It's a yes or no question.
I answered the question. I told you on the surface level, no. Do you want me to answer it again?
Because on the surface level, no.
From what you said, the basic details.
Words.
The basic details of what you said, I would say no.
Okay.
But there's more to that story, I'm sure, and I would love to know more before coming to a final conclusion.
There's no more to the story.
According to you, Ken. According to you, 100% according to you, you can scapegoat transgender people all you want. You can do that all you want to pass your crooked agenda on school choice. But the bottom line is public schools are going to suffer, and we're going to see teachers flee the state at a larger rate because of the radical agenda you're pushing. That's what's going to happen.
So my...
The school choice is radical. Is correct.
Crooked and radical.
School choice, correct. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yep, and you're using a marginalized population to push it as political pawns. That's what you're doing.
Okay. I'll let the listeners sort that out.
Great. And I hope the listeners understand that what I said and answered a couple times, I want more information. I want to know what the school officials were thinking. Is that irresponsible to want to know what they're thinking?
You want to know what the parent was thinking?
I would love to. They're a part of that process. They're a part of that decision-making process, Ken. You're not in public schools. You don't understand what it's like with all these decisions that come into play. I work with administrators who have to make tough decisions, who actually have to make certain decisions and then are told by a different parent comes out and says something that's not true, and then another parent says something that's not true. And a lot of times, there's just more to the story, and it's okay to understand and listen.
We're coming up on an hour.
Sure.
I think that our listeners have a pretty good idea of where you all are coming from.
Sure.
Normally I would give you a minute or two to sum up and I don't know if we need to do that.
I think we're good.
No, I think we've covered a lot. We could talk more, Bob, you know that, but then right. We've covered the most important things probably.
But what I want to do is say thank you for sitting down with me, both of you.
Sure.
And thank you for caring enough about your communities and our state to run. And I very much appreciate it. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for giving us the chance.
Yeah, appreciate it for having us here.